Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. On today's show, we're going to talk about math. That's right. I'm going right back to math. I'm going to go to that subject that made your head hurt for so many years going through school and then high school, then even into college. And even you business majors like me, you had to take some math and it made your head hurt. And then you got into the business world. You got into society and you realize, wow, math is kind of everywhere, isn't it? You know, depending on what you did for a living, you either did a tiny little bit of math or you did a massive amount of math or you did somewhere in between. Now, real estate investing, it's got math associated with it, but I don't want you to go, okay, that's it. I'm done, man. Me and math, we did not get along in high school. I sat in that algebra class and I could care less what a variable was, and I didn't understand what the letters A, B, and C had to do with all of that nonsense. Yeah, trust me, you're in my wife's camp. That's the way she looks at math. She looks at math like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's so complex. There's all of these things that have relationships with other things and then variables that interact with non-variables. And so my wife, when it comes to math, she's good with a simple calculator. She's even better when she pushes all the math responsibilities onto me. Now, I'm not God's gift to math. I'm certainly not God's gift to math. I'll just give you some background on me. So back in the day, I mean, we're going to go back a ways now. We're going to go all the way back to like when I was in high school. I used to hang out with the smart kids. Not that I was necessarily one of the smart kids, but the smart kids that I hung out with also participated in all the things that I enjoyed doing, which was like outdoor activities, hiking, camping, stuff like that, doing stuff with the Boy Scouts, and competitive sports. Things like swimming. I was really into swimming, and so were several of these guys that were really smart. So by natural association, this dumb guy, me, started hanging out with all these smart guys. And, you know, we'd go to math class, and, you know, we'd do algebra, and I got through algebra okay, and then we did geometry, and I got through geometry okay. I thought, okay, maybe I got this, man. Maybe this math stuff isn't so hard for me, right? And I get to something called Algebra 2, and I swear to God, it was like SEAL Team 6 came in, loaded C4 in my brain, hit the detonation switch, and it was done. My head was exploded. And I'll tell you what, I started leaning on these guys that were my buddies. I'm like, Doug, help me, buddy. Help me, man. I don't understand this stuff. Now, my best friend, Doug, bless his heart, this guy, he must have looked at me every day and just looked at me as somebody he had to take pity on. Because it's like, I wasn't the fastest swimmer. I definitely wasn't the smartest guy in math class. I was never the top performer in anything I did, but I was always able to pretty much keep up with the group. So, you know, and I like to have fun and stuff like that. So I guess they just kind of kept me around for humor. Well, Doug helped me hobble through Algebra 2. Yeah. And I took some other math class, analysis and pre-calculus or something like that in my senior year. And I thought, okay, man, this is tough. But in my mind, this math stuff, it ain't that hard. I can handle this, right? So I'm thinking in my mind, when I go to college, I need to be like an engineer or something. Yeah, like my buddies are going to be, because they're going to schools like Columbia and Caltech and MIT, right? I mean, those are easy schools to get into, right? So, you know, I'm hanging out with these smart dudes. I should be okay. Well, I decide in my infinite wisdom as maybe an 18-year-old by then. So, you know, I got massive wisdom, right? So I decide I'm going to study computer science because we're going all the way back to the early 80s, and what was coming into the world, it was computers. Now, computers way back in the 80s were not like computers today. Trust me, they weren't anything like what we have sitting on our desks. But I was intrigued. I actually took a class in my senior year that taught me basic coding with computers, and I was kind of drawn in. I thought it was pretty cool. I liked how all that coding stuff worked. So I thought, okay, this is it, man. I'm going to pursue a degree that focuses on math, even though I'm a terrible math student. Well, I wasn't terrible. I just wasn't really great. Now, that's probably the best way to put it. And that's what I'm going to do. So I get myself to college and I show up for two classes that were mandatory for computer science freshmen to take: Calculus 1 and Intro to Computer Science 101. Yeah. And I went into those classes. They handed me my butt, literally in the first 10 minutes of each class. I mean, I was overwhelmed. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready for the level of pain that they were going to inflict upon me. I really wasn't. I struggled through my first semester. I actually met a guy that he was actually from Taiwan. Nice guy. And I got to become friends with him. He was in both of those classes with me. And like Doug, he was trying to help me get through it. And about, I don't know, week 8 or 10 of the semester, he was just, we were kind of studying and I was kind of getting it, but I wasn't getting it. And I could tell he was frustrated because he got it. And he was looking at me like, dude, how come you can't figure this out? And I just kind of looked at him and I go, what do you think my future is? And he goes, business school. Yeah, that's literally how I wound up moving away from a life of solid math into the business school, where math is important, but it's not so intense. So that's kind of like what we're going to get into today. I'm going to give you the business school version of what they tried to teach you in college, except I'm going to go way easier on you. Stick around.
Del Wamsley talks about buying your way back from corporate America through real estate.
A massive change in my life. My personal residence I lived in was a one-bedroom condo, cost $425 a month. This covered it. My automobile car payment was only $300 and some a month. This covered it. I was buying my way back from corporate America. I could feel it.
Lifestyles Unlimited will teach you how to buy your way back from corporate America. Get in control. Get into our live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so you're sitting there thinking, man, I am just not in the mood for any math right now. Okay, I'm cool with that. I'm kind of where you're at, except I've got some very, very important information I want to share with you. I'm going to talk about how appreciation affects your investing strategy. And if you don't know what appreciation is the natural ability for an asset to go up in value over time. Now, there are a lot of things that impact appreciation of values. Market forces, inflation, interest rate pressures. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in our world that financially impact our real estate assets. Yeah. Appreciation is one of those good things that happens. Now, it doesn't happen all the time. I mean, you can go ahead and research real estate values over time, and you will see that there are periods of time, just like the stock market, where real estate values declined. But ironically, real estate values, when they decline, they tend to decline a lot slower than the stock market. So in other words, you don't just wake up one morning and all of a sudden 50% of the value of your portfolio is eroded because the market changed while you were still sleeping. Now, real estate has a tendency to go down in value, but a little more gradually. It doesn't tend to take that deep drop. And like the stock market, it has the tendency, when it does correct, to recover, to get back to a particular place of value where you recapture everything that you potentially lost, but it's a potential loss because you never transacted the property, so you didn't realize the gains. There's another way that appreciation affects real estate assets, and it has to do with something called forced appreciation. Now, because different types of real estate are valued differently, it's the way the market forces work. Things like single family, duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes, they're all lumped together. And the way they're valued by the industry is to take a look at what you're looking to sell your asset for. That's an agreed price between you and somebody else, whether you're buying or selling the property. And you come to an agreement on price and you enter into a process called escrow. So while you're going through the escrow process, one of the things that you're going to do is you're going to have a lender come alongside you. I'm on the buying side, by the way. So you're going to have a lender come alongside you, and that lender is going to bring you a bunch of money to invest in your asset. And in exchange for that, one of the things they want to make sure of is that, okay, we want to make sure the price is right because we want to be kind of on the lower end of the investment. We want you to take the risk for value increases and stuff. We're real happy being here in the lower 80% of the deal, making our interest and principal payments, and we're cool with that. And you can keep all of the growth and values, which I'm totally cool with. So they will have an appraiser come out who will make a determination as to what the value of that property is. And what the appraiser does is they look at what similar assets in that marketplace have sold for within a certain period of time, within a certain geographical radius of that property, and they will come up with an opinion of value for that property. Now, the reason this is important to you or me is that appraiser is essentially qualifying the purchase price that you and the other entity agreed upon. And if that appraisal comes in at least that value, or maybe more, everything is fine. Okay, maybe the person selling the property is like, man, I knew I should ask more, but everything is good. If that appraisal comes in lower than the agreed upon price, then there's a little bit of a situation that occurs. So the lender is only comfortable lending based on a percentage of that appraised price. So if there's a delta between what you're trying to trade for versus what it appraised for, you're going to have to make up the difference somehow. Either the seller needs to come down in price and say, okay, I was a little high, we'll come down a couple $1,000s, or you come in with a couple $1,000s because the seller's like, take it or leave it, dude. I'm not dropping my price. That's how single family works. Multifamily works kind of the same, but it actually works a lot differently because multifamily is valued based on income streams. See, anything that is a collection of, well, I shouldn't say anything because I might lead you into a bad place. So let's just say multifamily is designed to be five units or more. Usually those five units sit on a single parcel of land, but there can be different configurations and things like that. So if you're dealing with, let's say, 10 duplex properties and all 10 properties are right next to each other, you could essentially operate those properties as multifamily, but be very, very careful because if you go to sell those properties, if you don't sell them as multifamily, you may find that even though financially you were able to increase the value of the property, the overall value or the appraised value of those duplexes, well, they may not match up. So you just have to be a little bit careful, okay? But what I want to talk about right now is something called forced appreciation. And forced appreciation is a very unique thing to multifamily apartment community investing. Because when you start analyzing assets based on income streams, and then you start analyzing the values of those properties based on what we call capitalization rates, you start to understand that multifamily is going to give you a better opportunity to increase the value of those properties faster than maybe single family can do for you. Yeah, and depending on whether this, you know, just how distressed the asset is, that will have a significant impact on your ability to acquire that asset, renovate that asset over time while improving the operations, thereby building a beautiful property that people like to call home, that people want to rent at because you've got great assets in the marketplace. And people are looking for great assets. People are not looking for a property where they go and it smells like, you know, animal urine and the place hasn't been painted and, you know, the floors are like all bent up and out of shape. Trust me, people try and rent property like that. Okay, so when we come back from the break, I'm going to get into the math. And you're going to be amazed at what the math can do for you. Stick around.
One of the things I'd like to get across is that your whole life you wanted to make a change, right? But you never had the time? This might be it, because we have online education that you can get involved in.
We're now going to bring the free workshop to the entire country and really the world. Anybody who is interested can participate in that. We're going to live stream that free workshop and have people online with you on the live stream, talking with you, answering questions, interacting. You're really going to get a great feel for the Lifestyles community from this. And you can register for that. So if you want to find out about us, this is a great way to take a look at us and what we do.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. That's LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
We're back with the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We're here to answer your questions and help you become financially free.
Welcome back to the show. So in multifamily real estate, in other words, when you buy an apartment community and you own and operate it correctly, and you're focused on increasing the fundamental financials for that property, you're entering into something called forced appreciation. Now, what forced appreciation is designed to do is to allow you to do something kind of manual in nature to affect the overall value of your property. So what do I mean by that? Let's go back to the fundamentals, because I probably need to explain those to you so that the rest of this makes sense. A property in multifamily, again, normally anything 5 units or more, is valued based on its income streams. In other words, you take a look at all the income that that property makes. Now, the majority of that income tends to come from things like rents, but there are other ways that you can have a multifamily apartment community create, or I should say, provide other sources of income streams that have nothing to do with rent. Just to give you some examples of some of the things that, well, the lead investors that I'm invested with at Lifestyles Unlimited, some of the things that they've done to create additional income streams. So one particular investor, there was probably about a quarter acre of land that was just kind of sitting off in the corner. It really didn't have a lot of utility or purpose. The kids didn't really play there. When they finished off that community as far as rehabbing the entire community. One of the things that they did was they created a very nice area for children to play, to include, you know, playground equipment and things like that. So this piece of land kind of over in the corner was just kind of there, and it was kind of like, yeah, what do you do with that? Well, lead investor said, I know exactly what I'm going to do with that. So what he did was he built, new construction, mind you, storage units. Yeah, he built storage units on that little piece of property. And the reason he did this was that he had been getting feedback from his residents that in their particular apartment community, it'd be nice to have more storage. Well, the property was built the way it was. And I mean, each unit has some limited storage, but people, they've got more stuff than they've got room. I mean, let's just face it. That's how people are. So he built 20 different storage units, which he rents out to the members of that apartment community. And they're very appreciative because the rates that he's charging for those storage units are actually cheaper than what they can get, you know, a couple miles down the road at the storage facility. And their stuff that they want to store, it's right there on site. They don't have to get in the car and drive down the road a couple miles to go deal with their stuff. It's right there. It provided a lot of utility and a lot of value to that property. The other thing that it did was it increased the income streams of that property. And even though he spent some money to create those storage units, the return on investment that those storage units made was great. It was great. It increased the overall value, because value in multifamily apartment communities is based on taking all of that income and then subtracting all of your expenses. Now, your expenses don't include things like principal and interest on your mortgage. And I'll talk about that in a moment. There's a reason why. But things like taxes and insurance, which have a tendency to get bundled into your mortgage payments, those things are considered legitimate expenses. So you take all that income, you subtract all those expenses, and then whatever is left over is something called net operating income. Now, net operating income is one of the two pieces of information that you need in order to determine the value of this apartment community. The other piece of information you need is something called a capitalization rate. This goes back to the concept of why we don't include principal and interest as part of our expenses. See, capitalization rates are designed to give a particular, or any type of investor, any investor can use cap rates to understand what the returns on investment would be if they bought a particular asset and continued to effectively operate it as the time that they bought it. Yeah. So in other words, let's say there's a faceless entity out there called an insurance company. Okay, and they've got gobs and gobs and gobs of money. It's your money, by the way, that you pay in insurance premiums. And they have to grow that money because that's part of how they cover their expenses of paying you when you have a claim. All right, so one of the things these insurance companies do is they'll buy real estate assets. I mean, they do a lot of other things because they're ridiculously diversified, but they'll buy something like a multifamily apartment community. And what they'll look at is they'll say, okay, if that apartment community, if I pay all cash for it, what's the rate of return? And let's say an asset they're looking at is positioned within the marketplace to be traded at a 6% cap rate. Well, what that means is you take that net operating income, and I'll throw some easy math out at you just because easy math is what we need today, because I already hurt your head with the story of math, right? So let's say you've got an annual net operating income of $100,000. If you divide that by 6%, what it tells you is that that property is worth 1.66666. You know how that goes, right? Put a 7 on there. That's the value of the property based on the incomes that it's producing. So in other words, if you paid all cash for that property, you would receive as your reward for effectively operating it correctly, a 6% return on your investment, a 6% return. Now, we don't buy our assets the way insurance companies buy their assets. First of all, we don't have, I don't know about you, you might be different than me, but I just don't have, say, $10 million laying around to go pay all cash for a property. And if I did have $10 million laying around to pay all cash for a property, what I would do is I would leverage that very effectively so that I could get at least five properties out of it, because I will bring in a lender to augment me, to give me the rest of the capital contribution that I need in order to acquire that asset and operate that asset. And in return for doing that, I will pay the principal and interest. That payment falls below the net operating income line on your operating report. And the reason is, debt is a personal decision. It is a personal decision to bring debt onto a property. We do it because there's two primary reasons why we bring debt onto the property. Number one, it allows our personal capital to go farther. We can buy more assets with our available capital. Number two, and I think this is the best reason, this is absolutely the best reason, that lender partners with you at whatever your strike price is. Whatever you acquire that property for, that's the price they get in at. But as you start doing things to force appreciation on that property, what you're going to find is that value of that property is going to go up, but that loan amount is not going to change. See, that lender does not participate in the equity growth that you create on that property. So everything above that strike price, essentially, that's yours. It's kind of cool, isn't it? Now, when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about another form of appreciation that's natural, and it's occurring right now. As a matter of fact, you don't have to do anything. It's just happening. When we come back from the break, I'll tell you what that is. Stick around.
As I sit here and read article after article and see TV show after TV show, the normal person out there on the street cannot overcome their fear to get to the analytical part of this whole process. I'm not afraid of, and I'm actually ready for, a recession, a crash of value of anything and everything. Why? It is the opportunity to do incredible stuff. But that's my analytical brain.
The United States has a very strong economy. We will return to our basic economic foundation. This is not going to be the end of the world for everyone. But you do need to take some action. And some actions will be more productive than others. And one of the things that I think you can do now is take this time, like you said, Del, people are going to be sitting at home, and you have a time right now to change your life. Make what you have work for you.
You need to get into lifestyles right now.
Join us for our free online workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so we're going to talk about something that occurs naturally, something called natural appreciation. It is something that just occurs based on the market flow. Now, what got me focused on this particular topic was a wealthmanagement.com article that showed up yesterday in my inbox, and it was talking about the 20 markets where real estate will likely grow the most in 2021. And what they're really talking about is rents. They're talking about where the market rents will likely grow. Now, this is kind of important, because if the market is already working in your favor, that's part of the battle. That is part of the battle. See, one of the things we want you to do when you acquire a multifamily property is to position that property to increase the value of the property. By increasing the value of the property, you're going to be able to do certain things in the future that you cannot do currently. Things like position the property for a cash out refinance, where maybe you take all of the money that you put into that deal out of that deal. So now you've got no money invested in that particular property, yet that property is still producing cash flows for you, and you're still getting the benefits of not only forced appreciation as you affect it, but you're getting the benefits of natural appreciation too. Meanwhile, you've got this big pile of money that you just pulled back out of the property after putting that amount of money into that property. And what you're going to do is you're going to go find another asset to put that money into. See, that's the neat thing about multifamily investing. That's how all of our Lifestyles Unlimited award winners and the non-award winners, yeah, because we've got a whole lot more people that don't compete for awards, or if they do, maybe they just didn't win, but that doesn't mean they're not winning in the real estate game. This is how they make money in multifamily. This is the power of multifamily. And if you can get yourself on a glide path where you can find a distressed asset and you can improve the financial position of that asset, and you're getting some help from the market, which is good, but you're also focused on doing the things that you need to do to increase the income streams. And let's say you spend 3 years working on that asset. And along the way, you're getting the benefits of owning and operating that asset. At the end of 3 years, maybe you sell that asset. So you're thinking, oh man, I don't have any cash flow. But you've got a lot of money, a lot more money than when you started. Or maybe you just don't sell the asset. Maybe you just do that cash out refinance like I was talking about. You pull your money out and you put it to work someplace else. Meanwhile, you continue to operate that particular asset. So really, what it boils down to is, how many assets do you need to acquire to get to that point of retirement? And more importantly, once you get to that point of retirement, what's it going to take for you to achieve that lifestyle? See, that right there is why we do everything that we do with real estate investing. Now, wealth management, like I said, they just shot out an article dated yesterday, and it's talking about the 20 markets where apartment rents will likely grow in 2021. Okay, so as everybody knows, everybody's aware, we spent the last year plus in lockdown, dealing with coronavirus, dealing with issues in our society. We're past that. Now, in some markets, rent growth declined, but not in every market. As a matter of fact, most of the markets that I'm looking at in this report indicate that rent growth did tend to increase. Now, there was one market, I won't tell you where, Austin, Texas, where the market went down a little bit as far as rent growth. But the multifamily markets have, for the most part, held their own. They really have held their own as far as year over year rent growth. So when we look at how these different markets are positioned for future rent growth, this is where it gets pretty exciting. So I don't have a whole lot of time left in the show, but what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to share with you how just natural appreciation. I mean, let's say you're just one of those guys, like you bought the property, you did everything, and you're just going to sit on the couch. And that's just the way you roll. And you're going to rely on natural appreciation. Okay, so let's talk about how natural appreciation affects the future of these properties. Here, I'll pick on Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas actually showed up number 9 in this report as far as projected rent growth. And what they're saying is they anticipate the rent growth to go up 3.6% in Houston, Texas. Now, the year-over-year rent growth as of April 2021, that's looking at the preceding 12 months of rent, only went up 0.4%. But even during coronavirus, rent still went up 0.4%. They still did. Yeah. So if you're looking at a 3.6% increase, that's going to do some great things for you. And let me just explain how. Let's just assume you own a 50-unit apartment community. You own it as an independent rental operator, meaning you don't have any partners in the deal. It's just you and maybe your immediate family members. And let's say that 50-unit apartment community is producing average rents of $1,200 a month. I mean, that's a reasonable rent in the Houston market, right? When you take just the rental income, and I'm not factoring vacancy rates or anything like that. I'm just going with raw numbers because I'm trying to make a point. You're going to have an income stream on those properties $720,000. Your expenses, and I'm going to calculate your expenses at about 40%, and I'm using National Apartment Association data. I'm using trend data from them, which indicates what average expenses are across the industry. That doesn't mean your expenses will always be 40%. Every property is different and must be treated that way. But for giggles and grins, and because the math is easy for me, I'm going to say your expenses are at 40%, meaning you're paying $288,000 a year in expenses to operate that property. So your net operating income on this property is $432,000. Now, because you have debt service on this property, because you've got a Lifestyles Unlimited vendor that is completely knowledgeable about what we're doing, and they're willing to make you an 80% loan, they're going to loan you $4.95 million. So here's the thing. When the dust all settles, after you pay your debt service of $292,000 against a $432,000 NOI, you're going to have about $140,000 worth of cash flow. Yes, you heard me correctly, $140,000 of income. Yeah, that's what multifamily can do for you. But more importantly, the value of your property, and I'm going to use kind of a higher cap rate. I'm going to use a 7% cap rate, which is a little bit higher than properties that we are invested in or probably trading for. I just would rather give you the more conservative number than give you the more aha number. So you're looking at a value of $6.17 million. When that property goes up 3.6%, when your rents go up 3.6%, at the end of the year, that means your average rents have gone up to $1,243. Basically, that's a $43 a month increase on average per unit. $43 a resident is paying. You've got 50 of them paying it now. So your income is going to go from 720 to about 746. Your expenses should stay about the same, but I'm going to use that same inflationary rate on the expenses. I'm going to push your expenses from 288 to about 299. So your net operating income is going to jump from $432,000 to $447,500. So you're thinking, okay, that's not a huge number. That's only about $15,500. But here's the thing. Your debt didn't change. The debt doesn't change. Remember, I told you that your lender does not participate in your equity, only in the debt. So as a result of that, your debt stays where your debt was. And your new cash flow goes from $140,000 to about $155,000 and change. So that cash flow is going up about $15,000 a year with you not doing anything. Now, here's the neat thing. The value, when calculated at a 7% cap rate, based on this new value, we went from a $6.17 million value to a $6.39 million value. So in other words, the value of that property, just based on natural appreciation of Houston, at 3.6%, that's projected, should not only put another $15,500 into your pocket, it should also increase the value of your property by over $222,000. That is wealth, folks. And if you want to find out how to do this, go to freeworkshoplivestream.com. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.